From the Reeves Building Studios in downtown Sioux Falls. 50-plus years serving the region. Make it last and make it Reeves. I'm Bill Zortman. Welcome to our It's Your Agribusiness Show. Yesterday was show 4444. Today it's 4446. And why not add a couple of numbers and add people like Scott Lawrence? And who's this lady from Dakota State?
President Yose Marie Griffiths, also a doctor, but I prefer to call her President Griffiths because that's what she is, President Dakota State University. The Mitch mentioned last hour the 2024 Sioux Falls Cybersecurity Conference. And President Griffiths has recommended some speakers, but I see President Griffiths. We're going to talk cyber ag here in a sec, but Jim Edmond, cybersecurity coordinator for Department of Homeland Security Cyber and Infrastructure Security Agent, CISA.
CISA.
Okay, do you know him?
I do. Yes.
Oh, okay.
Yes.
So will he be a good keynoter?
Yeah, absolutely. Yes.
Okay. So you would advise, whether you are in banking or healthcare or ag or whatever, that this conference would be good?
Absolutely. It's a good thing to go and find out more about what's happening in cybersecurity. But CISA is the agency that's responsible for helping to protect the national critical infrastructures, the financial sector, the healthcare sector, the food and agricultural sector, the communication sector, the power sector, et cetera.
Oh, okay. Well, that's a big job then.
It's a huge job.
So he's obviously he's a very qualified speaker, and that should be a very, very good, very, very good conference.
We talked about ag and cybersecurity.
Yeah.
This is an ag show, and obviously it's going to blend in with the other folks that are listening today. Cybersecurity and ag, do they go together?
Absolutely. I mean, agriculture is one of the critical infrastructures in the United States. You're using a lot more technology for farm vehicles that are communicating with satellites, sensors in fields and sensors with livestock. And there are signals going all over the place. And any time you have data traveling from one point to another, you have the potential risk that somebody can infect the data. And that will then infect what you do with the data. And so any solutions will be inappropriate. So you could, in precision agriculture, those massive machines, you'll have to excuse me, I don't know a lot about the actual agriculture part.
Well, you said massive machines.
Massive machines.
They
right?
are massive.
They're huge.
Yes.
I feel as though I could drive right underneath one of them and meet one on the street. But many of those are autonomous. But in fact, if you send the wrong signal, either it will not know exactly where it is, and so then it will put the herbicide or the water or whatever it's doing in the wrong place in the field and could do a lot of damage to our actual crop production.
So where would they, if somebody was going to hack the, are there satellites that the equipment is beaming to?
Yes.
That's beaming back down to their home computer or something?
Yes.
How would you do it?
Well, that's it. No, you could attack the satellite. In fact, I don't like to tell people too much about what you could do because people might go out and
yeah,
do it.
Yeah, okay, all right.
If you really wanted
could you
to
speak
attack,
in another language?
You could really attack the system by doing something to the satellite, by shifting the signals coming to and from the satellite. The other place is increasingly we're trying to not have to do everything to the satellites because of the time it takes, even though it's fairly quick. Mm-hmm. So there's increasingly what we call more technology at the edge, and the edge is getting more information to the devices at the edge. I can give you an example, not quite from agriculture, but similar. So it would probably be something in the field that's monitoring. But if you think about traffic in urban areas, you have vehicles that will be communicating, especially autonomous vehicles, will be communicating their signals of where they are. They'll be communicating with other vehicles. And at some point, somebody could poison the data flows between them, let's say between a vehicle and a traffic light. It could sort of send the wrong signal. So it actually tells the vehicle, no, it's green when it's actually red, and could cause a lot of chaos and a lot of damage and a lot of potential loss of life. So translate that now into the agricultural environment. Cybersecurity is all about signals and machines. And ultimately, if those signals are polluted, they're poisoned in some way, then it can have disastrous results in the actual decision, the actual implementation, or whatever it is we're doing. So in the cybersecurity world, in some respects, we're a little agnostic about the application, because if you're poisoning data, it doesn't really matter where you're poisoning data. You could poison data to a dosimeter in a hospital and change the dose of somebody's medication because you can poison that transmission. But in the agricultural sector, as a critical infrastructure and as our reliance on agriculture for our nation's food supply, it's a very, very important thing to take care of. And I fear agriculture was a little late to the cybersecurity game. And it has, I think I saw the first plan was in about 2015. So now it's moving forward quite aggressively. And not just individual farmers and ranchers, but in fact the larger agricultural producers, the producers of these large machines, are now getting engaged in making sure that there are protections for the security of the signals that are being sent.
I think that when you talk about cybersecurity, I mean, you know, I envision these really smart people sitting in a room that's secure that you can't get in, because I've been there and they won't let me in. That it's all this cyber warfare, playing offense, playing defense. But in reality, cybersecurity is a huge part of our everyday lives. If I'm running crop production, I mean, I'm in the middle of it. Now, I understand Dakota State University is engaged with cyber agriculture, and you're doing some work currently for some of those big machine manufacturers?
Yes. Yes. We're doing work actually with Case New Holland, and we're working on agricultural machinery that's not in production today. We're looking at the future, what's coming, you know, 5-6 years down the road, and we're working to ensure that as those vehicles become more intelligent and using more data, that they will be protected, that we will actually know when people are trying to attack them and we'll be able to fend off attacks.
All right, that's the ag side. Businesses that ought to be paying attention to this conference, what would you tell them?
I would tell them it's good to go to these conferences to find out the trends, to find out what other people are doing, where the real concerns are, who the big threat actors are. You know, you've got everything from, somebody who's trying to break in and hack because they can. You've got criminal gangs that are trying to make money or through ransomware attacks. And then you've got nation states that are trying to do serious damage, maybe not immediately, but sort of they're thinking longer term and maybe thinking, oh, let's try and attack this, see if we can do it, and then sort of stay for a while and then go attack somewhere else. And I think the potential, I think we heard Chris Ray and a bunch of people in Washington recently giving concerns that there might be coordinated attacks on our critical infrastructures. And we need to be aware that agriculture is one of those critical infrastructures.
Yes. You know, it's kind of a scary thought, but shutting down the power grid or any of those things, I mean, would be chaotic. Where are we as a country? Where are we in this whole cyber situation? Are we ready? You're never ready? All you do is keep working at it?
Well, you're never fully ready. You're constantly chasing, because the moment you've sorted out a problem and you know how to thwart an attack, they'll be onto something else. And the technology is constantly evolving as well. So it's almost a never-ending struggle to try and stay ahead of the bad guys, really.
Okay.
Wow. Now we know.
Well, if you want to know, President Griffiths can always lay it out for you. Hopefully, like I say, you'll have to bring it down a couple of levels so that
we'll have to stay after school.
Yes, that the leader of the band can understand it. But anything else, Bill?
That's going to help us this morning. We got another threat going on. You got something else
want to
add?
I did want to add. We're hosting a cyber ag conference. We've been working collectively with South Dakota State University.
Yes.
With money that we got from the legislature a couple of years ago, and that will be on August the 15th. at the Holiday Inn downtown. So look
here.
Out for announcements, yes,
oh.
of the work that we're doing with South Dakota State for agriculture.
We'll have to get her in.
Yeah, you keep that on the radar. That'll be a great conference for our producers around to you know get more information on it. So that'll be fantastic.
We appreciate you guys. We got to get into this other threat that is involving some flu. Let's get an update this morning. Jeff Kaizen is with us, and we've been reading a lot about some of the problems over in our neighboring state of Iowa. You can keep it over there if you want to, Jeff.
Sure, I guess. I hope dairy producers in Iowa are watching their biosecurity, and as importantly, wherever they get animals from, that they're having discussions if it's from another farm in Iowa or another state, that they're checking the health of the animals and the herd that they're going to get replacements or animals from to make sure they're not spreading the disease or bringing high path avian influenza into their dairy herd.
Jeff, if you will, when's the last time we had anything quite this serious?
Well, I guess avian influenza itself and what we've been dealing with, the poultry industry is serious or, you know, more serious. But any time you deal with essentially what's being termed as an emerging disease and not understanding, you know, when it's spilled over into dairy cows, it's uncharted territory for us. And not knowing how it spreads, there's a lot of concern right now that it's cow to cow and that milk has a lot of virus in it, that could be a transmission route. But we just don't know, and there hasn't been a lot of experiments done in dairy cows and understanding from when they're infected, how long they're infected, when they stop shedding. So as far as an emerging disease, it's quite difficult to predict what's happening.
Jeff, as we talk, the dairy people kind of know what they're looking for. The consumer is the one that wants to feel secure that you guys are doing the right things.
Sure, and we're monitoring very closely situations in other states. We're having daily discussions with the USDA and on calls with other state animal health officials to understand what's going on and, you know, continue and make sure that, you know, pasteurized milk is the way to go and making sure that people understand that process.
So, Jeff, your background, if you will, share a little bit so people understand who you are, what you do, and how you've done it.
Sure. Well, actually, I'm the state veterinarian for Iowa. I have been since 2019. Started with the department in 2013 and actually worked in the avian influenza outbreak in 2015 and the current one we're in. Besides being state veterinarian, I also farm and have a few cows and sheep myself. So I have a very vested interest in agriculture in Iowa.
Folks in South Dakota are watching closely. Minnesota, we talk with them all the time as well. And it's like, well, if it's in a neighboring state, we could be next. But, you know, you had them all the way down to the Texas-New Mexico border, a place that I lived down there in a number of years. And it's the first time I've seen dairy that's been affected that far south. Am I missing something?
Well, so it appears that this was a spillover from wild birds, that this virus appears to be circulating in wild birds and somehow jumped into dairy cattle. They started shedding the virus cow to cow, and we have information that the cows also, that you know, are tracking it or moving it, and that's how we had multiple states introduced into other states that, you know, as well as the swine industry and the poultry industry, the dairy industry's networked and has connections in other states. So that's why one of the things that we're stressing the huge importance, and I've already mentioned, is making sure you understand where your animals are coming from and the health status of that farm that they're coming from, because this has, it's indicated that this has been spread state to state via cow movements.
You know, as we talk about that, are there requirements, are there checks made before these animals are allowed to move state to state?
So we're monitoring that very closely. We have not in Iowa changed our import requirements. Some states have imposed or reinforcing what their import requirements are, but you know, there's pros and cons to all those pieces, and that's why, you know, there's downfalls of import requirements and potentially affecting foreign trade and how other foreign countries look at it, that if you start imposing restrictions, but and this is not being termed a regulatory disease, it's being called emerging disease. That's again why we are stressing the importance of, if dairy producers can stop movements voluntarily, and absolutely making sure that they're checking the health status of animals they're moving into their farm to ensure they're not moving it.
The birds themselves, the movements they make season to season, kind of the time of year that we see it, or does it matter calendar-wise?
So, there are some seasonal, it appears that it's being developed or is moving into a pattern of some seasonality. We have seen avian influenza throughout the past year, 2 years, but there are peaks in the spring and fall during the migratory season, and that's why we're also encouraging dairy producers to make sure that, if at all possible, minimizing or stopping that contact between wild birds and their dairy cows, and understanding that's not as easy in the dairy industry and facilities and how they're set up. And we're also encouraging poultry producers now that it appears that it's more of a potential that it's tracked, physically tracked, and that dairy producers need to make sure that their biosecurity is taking that into consideration.
The other thing that I worry about, having been in the business for 50-some years, is the media reporting it, not having a source that is to a point that they really know what they're talking about. We don't need that either. The media has got to make sure they're being careful as well.
Absolutely. We talk about all the time, staying grounded in science and making sure as we make decisions, whatever it is, whether it's import requirements or how we discuss the situation, that we're dealing with it in a science-based manner.
So, being a part of the media, how often should we be checking with a guy like you?
We're always open. Anytime you need updates, we're happy to give updates whenever we can.
Jeff, appreciate your time today. Let's watch what's going on, and we'll try to do our side on the media to make sure we don't overreact, but we do react.
Absolutely. Thank you.
Coming up in tomorrow's show, we'll talk with two of our ag secretaries in the region, Iowa and Minnesota. We'll even try to reach South Dakota and make it a clean sweep. Up next, though, we got Fair Time coming. Stay with us.
I love it. I want some more of it. I try so hard. I can't rise above it. Don't know what it is about that little gal's loving, but I like it.
We always like to play a little fair music to get started, and we're 4 months away, but Mr. Scott Wick is with us this morning, and I see entertainment names are starting to be bounced.
Yeah, good morning, Bill. Thanks for having us. Yeah, we announced Flo Rida this morning, and that show will be Thursday, August 8th of the fair, and tickets go on sale June 3rd.
So, between now and then, what are you doing to make sure everything's in place for the August 2 to 10 run?
Well, we're even working on the fair for next year in 25 already. We've had some challenges getting our entertainment booked, but we've got all but one day booked. So pay attention to website, Facebook page to see those other announces that are coming out. So we're continually working on the property, getting everything ready to go, making sure all of our partners are in place sponsorship-wise, as well as staging, lighting, sound, and everything else that we need to pull the show off. So we're very excited for the show again in August, and we've got a couple One thing that's new and exciting for the fair is on Friday night, August 9th, with our overwhelming success for our Bulls and Bronx matchup we have in February, we're now doing a Bulls and Bronx matchup during the fair on a Friday night, and that would be August 9th, and we're calling it Monsters in the Midway. So we'll have 2 days of rodeo. We'll have Friday night, and then we have two performances of the Sioux Empire Championship Rodeo that will be on August 10th this year.
You know, do you feel like we've jumped the gun a little bit by going from April 16th, day after tax day, to the August dates for the fair?
No, I don't think so, because, you know, for us, it's all the other 130 events we have a year, but a lot of our day, not as much as some of the others, is working on the fair coming up for that show in August. So it's something that we deal with every day. Aside from the other events that we have going on, for instance, this weekend, we've got the Junk and Market Days are going to be in the north room of the Expo. And at the same time, we have Lynch Performance's Spring Fling of Team Roping and Barrel Racing. All coupled with the fact that, Egg Appreciation Day is August 7th this year. And I know Brooke at the Chamber is working hard on that event as well. We're working with our livestock supervisors and meeting with sponsors and other gate folks as well to make sure that we're fully staffed for the fair.
Well, you don't mind us keeping our nose to the ground, our ears with it, and calling you back, do you?
Oh, call back at any time, and I would encourage people to continually check our website. I think it's a very user-friendly website because it's got nice big buy tickets right up at the top, so you don't have to click through a bunch of pages. And also stay tuned to our Facebook page. And kind of as an if I can take another few seconds as a total property note, Julie Hammer, who's our executive administrative assistant and a great friend of the family, she had 4 AEDs that were donated to the fairgrounds through the Adam Thompson Foundation. So we have we've stepped up the game there. So we'll have these vital machines. Always hoping and praying that we don't have to use them, but there will be 5 of them on site, strategically placed during the fair and around for all of our events, which was a very nice donation, and we thank that foundation.
Scott Wick, appreciate you. I have a hunch we're going to talk again soon.
Well, I appreciate you inviting me on with you, so thank you very much.
Candy, do you remember that song?
Our state fair.
Oh, it's music to my ears. I love it.
Well, it may be a little early to do it, but, if we're going to get Scott on with what's going on at the Sioux Empire Fair, the state fair, to that.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, and we haven't done the countdown for a while, so we are, I had to look to see where we're at. We're at 133 days, 20 hours, 30 minutes, and 24 seconds and counting until this year's state fair. So, you know, it might seem like it's a little ways off, but boy, that time is certainly going to fly and people are going to enjoy all the fairs in South Dakota and then be able to cap it off with the state fair. But we have a lot happening with the state fair. We did announce some of our headlining entertainment recently, where we have the Goo Goo Dolls coming in on Friday, August 30th. We have Riley Green, Welcomed by Pioneer, on Saturday, August 31st. And then Trace Adkins, Welcomed by Legend Seeds, on Sunday, September 1st. And we do kick off the state fair with our two nights of Red Wheel Construction, Tough Hedeman Bull Bash, and that's Wednesday, August 28th, and Thursday, August 29th. So we have a great lineup. We're working on something for Labor Day and to add in some support acts for those headlining shows on that Friday, Saturday, and Sunday. But we're excited to have that done, and tickets go on sale in June, and we've also been working hard on getting our vendors in, and camping reservations came in strong. And lastly, I guess our exhibitor books are now online, so people can take a look at how they can be involved, whether that's in our open class livestock shows or also the horticulture and the arts and the domestic arts programs, those departments. Those books are also available. So check that all out at sdstatefair.com.
So I'm guessing lots of events between now and then. You know, we've got May, June, July before we get to August.
Yes, we are busy, to put it mildly, which is very exciting for us. The DEX certainly has kept us moving, and we're happy to bring on another team member to the fair family that's been focusing on promoting the DEX and managing those events in that facility. And there's a lot that goes into managing the DEX. So we're grateful to have Katie Eslick in that position. But a lot of the activity is, you know, rotates around the DEX. We started a weeknight at the DEX, a night of roping action, and another night is barrel racing. We have some rodeos and team ropings and other barrel racing scattered throughout the spring and summer months. but our crown jewels outside of the fair happen in the first half of the month of June. We have Wheel Jam and the South Dakota Barbecue Championships June 6th through the 9th. And then right on its heels is the Dextravaganza featuring Thomas Rhett, and we're doing that in celebration of the Dex. So tickets are on sale for that now. And there's a ton of other events going on in there, so it's very exciting. And we do have our full calendar of events online at sdstatefair.com.
Candy Briley, appreciate you. 133 days, 20 minutes, 12 seconds. We'll talk to you soon.
That's great. Thanks, Bill.
From the Reeves Building Studios, yes, indeed, in downtown Sioux Falls, 50-plus years serving the region. Make it last and make the trumpets go away. Make it Reeves. Matt Swenson, Swenson Commodities, keeps us updated with all the news that the animals would want us to talk about, the grains, the big board on Wall Street. Matt, what you got at 10:35?
What we have here, lower market in beans down 7.25, down 7 in July. We're at 11.51 on the May contract. Corn is down 0.75 cents at 4.30 3/4. Wheat down 3.5, 5.48 1/2. Hog market's up 72 cents at 95.05. Cattle price up $1.12, $1.75 there. In June, feeders up $1.27 to 2.65 higher in May. Energy market's up 23 cents in the crude market. It's at 85.64. Stock market's down 5 points, 96 higher in the Dow, 21 higher in the NASDAQ. Gold's up $17. Silver's down 36 cents. Bitcoin's trading 1,300 lower. It's at 63,000. And there you have it.
So people want those numbers. How do they get them?
You can give us a call at 605-335-5570.
All right, Matt. We'll talk again tomorrow.
All right, thanks.
SBA, Jamie Wood is with us this morning, and I'm seeing national security just got more secure with what?
It did. This is a good news story, and I just want to amplify this across South Dakota, this success story. So we have a small business owner out in Rapid City that we have worked with for a lot of years. His name is Rob Robbie, and he is a service-disabled veteran-owned business for VRC Metals. And our national, he was our 2021 veteran owned small business of the year. And then also he is a 2022 SBA Thrive CEO leadership cohort.
What is Thrive?
Thrive is a CEO leadership cohort that, it's really geared towards small business owners, CEOs, operations managers. And so he took the cohort a couple years ago when it was out in Rapid City. But anyway, we just have to toot the horn a little bit for this gentleman and what's going on. And yes, national security did just get more secure with the ability to take cold spray technology, mobile. Cold spray is a processing of how they spray a special paint chemical at a velocity that's so strong that it, when it hits metal, it adheres like a weld.
Wow.
And so Rob has been working closely with South Dakota Mines, Ellsworth Air Force Base, and now Wright-Patterson Air Force Base to bring this cold spray technology that typically was kind of on site, or they would have to, their technicians would have to go to maybe a ship or where a fleet of defense, Department of Defense planes were, and their technicians would have to do it. Now they've made it into a mobile, more convenient, usable, you know, option for military units and others. And so they brought this technology now to the 28th Maintenance Group's additive manufacturing flight, which is out at, it's based out of Rapid City. So, Box Elder, Ellsworth Air Force Base. And we just are so proud of this small business. And Rob and his team have been using small business innovation and research, SBIR seed money. They've been using some of the guaranteed lending from SBA, the 504 lending. They've used the small business development centers. They've taken Thrive. And he's an example of how a small business can use all those tools in the toolkit to really advance their business and get into the supply chain. So he's active in that government supply chain. And so I wanted to give him a shout out. A little bit more about Thrive. Thrive is emerging leaders reimagined, and it revolutionizes the rich history of executive level training for small businesses. It is sponsored by the SBA. It's absolutely free. It's a research-based executive level program that combines business fundamentals with the innovative tools and competitive strategies needed really to deliver immediate results. It's like a mini SBA. It's 6 months long. It's kicking off in June again in Sioux Falls. It goes through December, but we meet in person about once a month for 4 hours, about once a month. And then the rest of it is meetings online. And there's on demand training too. There's eight different modules, everything from HR to business succession, like who you're going to turn your business over to, and it's never too early to start thinking about that. So please apply. We have room for 20 in the cohort. We're about half full right now. SBAthrive.com. SBAthrive.com is where you can sign up for that. How are we doing on time, Bill? How are we doing on time?
Probably about a minute.
Okay. So coming up on April 30th, SBA and many of our resource partners are meeting at the Black Hills State University campus in Rapid City to provide an informational seminar that focuses on supply chain. So this supply chain that we're going to be focused on is all about government contracting, all the different levels of government, from municipal up to federal contracting, exporting supply chain, so that international supply chain, and then manufacturing. A lot of times I get asked, what is supply chain? Supply chain is getting your goods and services into the logistical chain, whether it's a corporation like the Amazons, the Walmarts, the Walt Disneys of the world, the Sanford and Avira, and Mayo Clinics. I mean, it's getting your goods and services, everything from a tangible, like pencils and pens and toilet paper, to cybersecurity and also grounds, security or IT, security. So we really want to make sure businesses know about this. We're going to have this great event from 8 until 1 Mountain Time on April 30th. It's absolutely free. It's in Rapid City. We're encouraging people from across the state, and also if you're across the border in, the border states around South Dakota, you're invited to come too. There'll be some contracting officers. We are going to have some VIP visitors in from our headquarters in D.C., and we're going to give some awards away for 2024 SBA South Dakota Small Businesses of the Year. So please register for the event at sba.gov/South Dakota, and we're really eager to get you there. Following that, on May 2nd, and this will be in person as well, right here in Sioux Falls, we're gonna give away some more of the 2024 SBA South Dakota Small Business of the Year awards. That's going to be at Looks Market at 2 o'clock on May 2nd. So please join us as we present Nick and Greg Heineman, the son and father co-owners of Looks Marketplace, and some others with their prestigious awards. For anything we can do to help you, please contact SBA South Dakota to help you get your business kickstarted or growing, and we'll introduce you to the rest of the network. You can find us at 605-330-4243. Look us up online, sba.gov/South Dakota.
Jamie Wood.
Thank you. Have a great day.
Appreciate you. Big week in Brookings. Jerry Idy has that. Dr. Tree will be joining us, and Laura Edwards as well. It's a big event this week in Brookings. And Jerry Idy, FFA of South Dakota. We had a chance to talk to one of the guests yesterday, and you've got a couple of guests today, Jerry. Hello, Jerry. Did we lose Jerry?
Good morning. We have three stars with us today that will all be convening in Brookings on Thursday for the state FFA convention with over 2,100 members. And we have star Ryan Blagg and star Abby Wagner and star Paul Kafar, all from McCook Central. They're finalists in their star area, and they can share a little bit about their projects and what it means to them. But they're our outstanding students.
All right, where do you want to start?
We'll let them pick. They've got the phone. Just go ahead, guys. One of you chime in and share what your project's about and a little bit what it means to you to be star.
Hey, so I'm Ryan Blagg here. I'm a star finalist in the farmer, business, and placement areas. Through the farmer area, I raised purebred Simmental cattle, and I also raise show goats that I market to 4-H and FFA youth. For my business area, I operate a custom bean rolling business, and I roll around 400 acres of beans each spring for custom work. And then for my my placement finalist, I have worked at a couple different operations throughout McCook County, and so just working for them, I've learned a lot from them. And then also through FFA, I've learned a lot, such as leadership roles. I've taken on the vice president role this past year, and yeah, that's about it, I think.
Well, we appreciate that. I'll be up on Thursday. I hope I get a chance to meet you.
Perfect. That'd be awesome.
All right. Who's our second guest this morning from the star list?
Hi, I'm Abby Wagner. I am a star in agriscience research. Throughout my agriscience research, I have completed 5 agriscience projects, 3 in the plant systems category, 1 in social systems, and 1 in food systems. All of these have really broadened my agricultural knowledge, and my whole goal with doing these projects was to become a star finalist. I've been looking forward to this since my freshman year when I knew that was an opportunity. And, yeah, this was just my whole goal, so I'm happy to be here. And other FFA experiences that I've had, I've been a chapter officer for the past 2 years. I've helped with our chapter sharing tree and also helped coach 2 of our LDE teams. So, yeah, that's basically all about me.
Abby, thank you. We appreciate you. And I think we, if I counted right with my Iowa education, we had 3 stars. Who's our third star?
Yep, that's correct. My name is Paul Kafer, and I am also a star in agri-science. A little about my projects, just kind of scoping through them. I tested whether or not the 5-second rule was true or false, and that was my very first project, which really kind of opened my eyes into the career of research and whatnot. So then, my next year, I surveyed local farmers within the area on whether or not technology actually had an effect on their production rates, along with then getting more into deeper research of electrolytes and if that had, if electrolyte replenishment was actually necessary for farmers and others who were physically active all the time. And then I got more into more of the farmer wise, where I tested herbicides on if natural or synthetic was more effective. And then my most recent project was about GMO versus non-GMO soybeans and which one had a higher photosynthetic rate for production wise. And a little more about like leadership wise, I was parliamentarian for our chapter, and then most recent I was a sentinel. So it's been kind of nice being able to see everyone in our chapter, and like Abby had mentioned earlier, it's being a star has been something I've always looked forward to, and it's kind of nice to finally get here and have my work paid off. So,
Jerry, we appreciate having you 3 of your stars, and we got a little time tomorrow if you want to talk.
Absolutely. We'd love to highlight some more of our students, and we're just so grateful for these outstanding young people and all they've learned and the great supporters that have helped make it possible for them to do the many activities that they've done, and their ag instructor, Mr. Terry Reekman, for pushing them to see their full potential.
And I'll see you on Thursday.
Sounds great. Thank you.
A tree that looks at God all day and lifts her leafy arms to pray.
Mr. John Ball is with us. We talked to him right after the Canton meeting last week. Lennox also had some concerns. And you said some people apparently listened to us on the radio.
Yes, good morning, Bill. That's correct. Some of the people came up afterwards after the meeting and said, I recognize that voice from the radio. You're Mr. Tree. So, so many of your listeners had attended the meetings.
So with what you came out of that meeting with, what should those people that are concerned about the emerald ash borer actually be doing?
Well, you know, for those communities, Lenox, for example, where it's a relatively new infestation, now is the time to start treating your ash trees that you want to keep. Now, many people in the community probably already started it, but this year, absolutely. So if you're on the fence as to whether or not to treat your trees, this is the year for all the Lenox folks. You usually want to get that done during the month of May, early June, so now's a good time to find a contractor and get that service done. And again, if it's an ash tree you don't want to keep, now's the time to start considering getting it removed. Because Canton, on the other hand, is now far into the infestation. And so for those folks, if you haven't started treating your tree, it's probably too late. The infestation's gone fairly heavy through that community, and almost all the trees are infested. So now it's the sad decision, well, when are we going to remove it? And so for Canton, really, it's this summer or fall, because they do want those trees down by November.
Replacement trees. If people need to replace trees, what should they be considering?
Well, you know, down in that area, Canton and Lenox and that, I'm going to give you a new tree, Bill. And that's tulip tree. How's that? A nice festive tree for spring. It does have an attractive flower, but it's also just a very nice shade tree. And we grow them in Brookings, too, by the way. So and I've seen 50-footers in Sioux Falls, and I've seen some nice ones in Canton. So tulip tree would be a nice addition for all your listeners down in, let's say, south of Brookings, South Dakota.
All right, Mr. Tree, we appreciate you. We got to get our state climatologist on. She may have some weather that affect a lot of the people that have trees.
Yep, and tell her it's raining, but I'll bet she knows.
I'll bet she does, too. Well. Mr. Tree, thank you. Laura Edwards, South Dakota state climatologist. John Ball gave you a weather forecast. It's raining where he's at.
Yep, it's raining a lot of places in eastern South Dakota, including Aberdeen, in here this morning. So, yeah, I just looked at the Mesonet at our weather station in Sioux Falls at Sertoma Park, and it looks about 3/4 of an inch of rain in that area for the last 24 hours. So that's a good soaking right now.
Moisture, how are we doing? Have we caught up at all?
You know, I think we're catching up, yeah. And looking at the forecast for the next couple days, you know, that southeastern corner of the state, south of, say, I-90, you know, we could see some total multi-day totals up around 2 inches, you know, 1.5 to 2 inches for some of those areas. The monthly average for rainfall for April is about 3 inches in that area. And already we've had about an inch of rain in Sioux Falls for April so far. So another 1.5 to 2 inches brings us really close to the average for April. And so that's all good news.
Now, being an old Air Force weatherman, I was a little worried when we went from the 40s to the 80s and seeing those finger clouds. This time of year, when we make that big a change, do we have some concerns?
Yes, you know, it is possible to have some severe weather this time of year for sure. And up here in Aberdeen last night, gosh, we had some howling winds up this way, and I know there was some severe weather watches last night, overnight, some hail out in the Rapid City, well, Northern Black Hills last night as well. So certainly we're in that time of year where we can see tornadoes and other severe weather. So make sure you're staying tuned to the weather, you know, day to day this time of year, because that stuff can pop up real quick. And best to know where you're going to be, where safe places, and what your actions might be if we do have severe weather.
Wettest places in South Dakota right now?
The wettest places, it is eastern South Dakota. Let's see what we have on total so far. Well, actually yesterday The data reported this morning, it was out in the Black Hills, Rapid City area. They had 1 to 2 inches yesterday. But today so far, it's eastern South Dakota. You know, in Brookings County, we have a total of about an inch. Up north of Watertown, about a little over an inch. So they're just a little bit wetter out that way today.
Driest.
Driest is probably, it was a couple areas up north here, you know, north and east of Aberdeen, only has had a couple tenths of rain so far in the last day, but also that south central part, like near, you know, Rosebud Sioux Reservation out that way, has had just a couple tenths as well. So a couple dry areas.
Temperatures for the next 2 days.
You know, we're looking at kind of moderate temperatures. You know, our average high this time of year in Sioux Falls is about 57, 58 degrees. Average lows are about 35. We'll be right around that, you know, highs in the 50s, low 60s, lows in the 30s to low 40s. So not too unusual for this time of year, but we do see, you know, some continued chances of rain pretty much until Thursday. And then we'll have some breezy conditions kind of starting over Friday and into the weekend. So, yeah, cooler by the time we see Saturday, our high is only going to be 51, which seems cool to us now. And we could see some temperatures down below freezing. So we're not out of the woods yet as far as frost goes. Our low on Friday night's about 30, low on Saturday night about 29. So we're still able to see some frost temperatures here this time of year.
Laura Edwards, appreciate you. The clock is running, the music playing. That means my time's up. Thank you for yours.
Kello News Talk 1320 KELO Sioux Falls, FM 107.9 KELQ Flandreau Sioux Falls, and online at kello.com.